Good afternoon and welcome to the Therapy Files. I'm obviously here with my delightful colleague, Callum Jones.
Hi, Craig.
Hello, Callum. How are you?
I'm really well, thank you.
And of course, we are also here with our brand new guest, Dr. Peter Blundell. Welcome, Peter. How are you?
Hello, thank you. I'm very well, thank you. It's lovely to be here on your podcast today.
It's such a privilege to have a counselling celebrity on the podcast, really. You're all
where
over
are
Twitter.
Are they coming later?
I'm sorry, we couldn't resurrect Freud, but you know.
Not through lack of trying.
I know. Yeah. So today is just a basic interview with Peter for our listeners. We've been wanting to interview Peter for a very long time, and we've finally managed to secure time to interview him. And we'll be interviewing him about his specialism, boundaries, and also we'll be sharing bits and pieces that we know about boundaries along the way. So would you like to start with the first question, Callum?
I would absolutely love to, Craig. Thank you so much. So for your side, Peter, and this is probably a very broad question, but I'm just purely curious for your perspective. And what would you say boundaries are for us?
I mean, this is a really brilliant question, and I feel like we could just do the whole podcast on this one question. It's really interesting. I think boundaries, quite often I think people interpret them as kind of like limits or rules that we kind of have to adhere to, if you like, because it's usually associated with kind of land and kind of marking out the boundaries of a particular place or whatever. But I think for me, it's much more about kind of containment and safety, particularly when we're talking about relationships. It doesn't have to be counselling relationships, it can be any relationships, really. So something for me about how we interact with each other and how we can do that safely, I think, is what boundaries are about for me.
Yeah, that makes complete sense. And I think there are, I think like you say, I think it's something that's completely essential for every aspect of our lives, isn't it? It's not just something we need to be conscious of in the therapy environment. It's something we need to be conscious about in our personal relationships. Mm-hmm. I mean, for yourself, Craig, I mean, what does that bring up for you, just out of interest?
Boundaries in general, they are sort of hidden force fields, I suppose. That's how I like to think of them. Hidden force fields that can be pushed, but shouldn't always necessarily be pushed. They're hidden demarcations where you don't step over a line, otherwise you get in serious trouble, depending on the situation and the individual in question.
Yeah, that makes complete sense. And I suppose in thinking about my own practice and my own personal life, there's a lot that comes up for me surrounding that. I mean, for yourself, Peter, kind of off that question, just to draw it out a little bit more, what got you personally so interested in boundaries?
To be honest with you, my initial interest began when I was doing my counselling training, actually. And I possibly maybe hadn't given boundaries that much thought before I started to kind of do that training. And when I was trying to get clarity from like tutors and fellow students about boundaries, like what are the acceptable boundaries, you know, as a therapist, you know, what can we do? What can't we do? I just found that everybody had just a completely different interpretation of what we should be doing or what we shouldn't be doing. So that set off my interest, really, just to kind of explore that a little bit and to kind of find out, well, why do we have such different perceptions about what should be going on? I was really interested in that idea of invisible force fields that Craig was talking about, because for me, there is something about boundaries which quite often does feel like it's invisible. And quite often we don't talk about it. And actually it's there in the unspoken quite a lot of the time, but we're not really kind of addressing it. We're not really kind of speaking about it and making it quite explicit. So I think, although a lot of them are invisible, I think maybe they should be brought more visibility brought to it, I think, which would be a lot helpful
agree,
to
Peter.
A lot of people.
I quite agree with that, because if we don't know if somebody has a certain boundary, how do we know unless we actually ask, you know, unless you know a person really, really well, and that's the only way that you could actually know what somebody's boundary is without actually discussing it in the first place, by knowing somebody really well. And I suppose in a counselling setting, we wouldn't know our client's boundaries on the first meeting, for example.
It's interesting, isn't it?
I think it is appropriate, though, also to to push boundaries, to challenge boundaries appropriately, especially when you're trying to get a client, for example, to see something from an alternative perspective, trying to ask them to imagine what it would be like from an alternative perspective, bearing in mind that I am not a qualified therapist at this very moment in time. I am taking a short hiatus from my training. It's more of an enforced break, really.
He didn't break any boundaries, Peter. Don't worry.
I really didn't. Don't worry.
It's interesting, it's though, isn't it? Like, I suppose for my own stuff on that, it's, I guess there is something quite restrictive about boundaries. But at the same time, Peter, and obviously you as well, Craig, they're also extremely important things. And I think that they're in place, as you said, Peter, and I think the key word there is for safety, isn't it? We have to be safe within therapy. We also have to be safe in our private lives. And I suppose that if we're not keeping to boundaries in therapy, not only are we not keeping ourselves safe, but we're not keeping the client safe either, are we? We're setting unreal expectations.
Absolutely. And I think there is something about safety, and there's also something maybe about consistency for me as well. I think there are different types of boundaries. Some of those are flexible, some of them might be kind of, we might change and we might move boundaries, but as long as we're kind of consistent in how we apply boundaries and we're quite clear about what it is that we are doing and why we're doing it, then I think that's really helpful for everybody. And that's not just counseling relationships, in our own relationships. If we're not clear about what somebody else's boundaries are, then how do we know if we're overstepping them, or having an impact on another person that we're in a relationship with, So I think there's something for me about being consistent with boundaries that I think is really important.
Definitely. I think there's something about which I think particularly I'm interested in, and I don't know about you, Craig, but I think there's kind of a fear of, I guess, transparency, isn't there? Sometimes people are quite frightened to actually put forward what their boundaries are, I suppose, for the fear of hurting somebody, isn't it?
It's an interesting question, Callum. Is it necessarily hurting them by setting their own boundaries? I don't necessarily think it is.
Sure.
I think maybe that feeling of hurting somebody has potentially come from your own
frame of reference.
That's the one, frame of reference. I think perhaps that's come from your frame of reference, but I don't know. Do you feel like you have hurt people by setting boundaries?
Well, I wasn't really meaning myself, actually. I was just talking in a general sense. But I don't know what you think on that, Peter. Do you think there is kind of a fear within our personal lives or even professional lives where we're frightened of articulating our boundaries because there's a fear of hurting others or
I do think there is something in that. But I suppose from my own experience, I say everybody's experience of boundaries is very different.
Sure.
So whereas some people might feel very comfortable explicitly putting out their boundaries and being it very clear with everybody exactly where they stand with that, there's a lot of people who don't feel confident or comfortable kind of setting those boundaries. Saying the word no, say for example, can be extremely difficult for some people to do that, because just kind of what you said there, sometimes they feel like that they are hurting someone or that it's a rejection in some way. And I think that's really important to remember, particularly when you're working in counselling and psychotherapy, that as a therapist, we might be very clear about what our boundaries are, but that doesn't necessarily mean that our clients are able to articulate that or not feel hurt, say, for example, by the boundaries that we're putting in place. So we've got to be quite mindful about understanding our own boundaries, but then also thinking about how we articulate that to other people as well.
Yeah, that makes complete sense. I suppose that pushes on, I guess, the next question. Craig, do you want to read that out?
Yeah, sure. Why do we need them in our lives? Why do we need boundaries? Why do we need those invisible force fields, as it were, you think?
I love this question because I kind of started to then think about my own life and all the reasons why I needed boundaries and how they kind of helped me in different ways. I think the first thing I'd probably say is, I think it's been really important for me just to know where my limits are. What am I willing to do? What am I not willing to do? And I think there was something that happened for me during my counsellor training where I started to actually reflect on that a little bit more and kind of really acknowledge my own limitations, if you like, and what it is that I'm willing to do and things that I'm not willing to do. Because if we don't know the answers to those questions, then it's quite hard to kind of put any boundaries in place. Is where we don't know our own kind of limitations. I think as well it's really important for the different relationships that we have, and not just kind of counseling relationships, but relationships with friends and family and things like that, because those relationships, a lot of boundaries are assumed. We kind of grow up in a family, and a lot of those kind of expectations that we have of each other are all kind of unspoken. And I think if we didn't know the different expectations and what we could and can't do in our families, then there'd be a lot of problems there. So we have quite a lot of these boundaries there already, but as we were talking about before, we don't always articulate them, we don't always discuss them with each other, I think.
Definitely, I think that's a really powerful response, Peter. And I think I find this really interesting for myself, because it's not something that I would say I've never not been interested in. I have always been interested in boundaries, but because mine's kind of, well, to be honest, my area of kind of interest in my PhD is for bullying, and I'm interested in kind of the violent responses to bullying behavior, how kind of the bully victim becomes violent after potentially experiencing bullying. So I find it interesting, and I've been trying to kind of adapt it to my own research, if that makes sense. Is there something about, you know, with bullying, is there boundary pushing going on in there about what we accept and what we don't accept, if that makes sense?
It does make sense. I definitely think there is something in terms of bullying where, you know, it's a targeted attack, isn't it? So yes. Somebody is pushing boundaries, you know, consistently, usually to get some kind of reaction or sure. to force somebody to do something that they don't want to do. So yeah, I definitely think there is something in there around boundaries. And yeah, and sometimes people can use boundaries to bully, you yeah. know, and target other people by putting in certain restrictions, if you like, or rules around how you can engage with each other, which are maybe oppressive rather than actually just protecting the individual. They could be used as a bit of a weapon, I suppose.
Definitely. And I think there's something about, you know, I think particularly about around physical bullying is there's often one of the key parts of how people assault people is preventing somebody from moving. So i.e. locking somebody up somewhere, preventing that person from walking away. And I suppose what that's doing there is ultimately challenging that person's right to move. So that's an ultimate boundary block, isn't it? You know, and you said before, and I thought it was a really good point, is, you know, we think about land, don't we? And boundaries on land or areas where we can't go into. And I suppose that for my own research, there's something really interesting about that. So I think for me, I just find it really fascinating. And it's nice how when you really think about it, they really play a factor in every aspect of our lives, don't they, really? Everything from going to work to where we can and cannot go, et cetera, et cetera.
I mean, there's so many different levels to it. I mean, just the idea of being locked in somewhere, like yeah. you say, it's yeah. a very physical restriction. You know, you are not going to leave this space because somebody else has set that boundary. But I think you're right, you know, boundaries kind of permeate through everything that we do, you know, even to the, you know, the psychological therapies that we talk about and the theories of the mind and things like that. Oh. You know, boundaries kind of permeate all of those kind of different aspects of things. So there's different ways that you can think about it. I think that makes it interesting as a topic. I also think sometimes it makes it a bit of a nightmare of a yes. topic to discuss, because we could be having a conversation about boundaries and a particular theme that comes up, but we could be interpreting that in different ways. So it makes it quite a complicated thing to discuss sometimes, I think.
Yeah, that makes complete
certainly sense. Yeah, I mean, one personal example that I'm willing to share with you both around bullying and boundary setting. I once experienced a physical boundary setting when I was in high school. My form room was an art room. I can remember going over to a display one lunchtime and having a look at the display. Because I have a visual impairment, it's kind of difficult to see written word when it's far away. So I obviously went over to the wall to have a look at what was written there. And I then turned around and I found that somebody in my form group, who I didn't necessarily even know that well or get on that well with, had organized for people to sort of like put pins down, i.e. pins that are tacked to the wall. So like they were like gold, and somebody put some chairs there. I should probably explain to you, Peter, that I am a wheelchair user, and that provides context to the situation. And so the pins and art tables and things and chairs all around me so that I couldn't physically move. So they literally trapped me in the corner. And that was one particular strong boundary that I can remember not being able to break. Thankfully, it was broken. Because as soon as the head of the art department heard the noise that was going on, she absolutely came in, and for want of a better word, she served them the penalty, shall we say. I had just realised that we were recording and I was about to swear.
That's okay, we can always edit it out.
But yeah, she absolutely served them a penalty, and thankfully I did get out of that corner because I'm here today. And the lesson I've learned from that is not to let anybody put me in a corner physically or emotionally. So, yeah, that's one example I can remember.
I mean, that just sounds like such a challenging experience. And I suppose one of the things I was thinking about what that must have felt like for you, but then also the fact that, you know, it required somebody else, a teacher, you know, to come in and break that boundary, if you like, you know, and kind of break that barrier and respond to that. And how sometimes in situations, we can't always fight those boundaries, you know, sometimes it does require help from other people, you know, to try and help us kind of overcome some of those.
Absolutely. I mean, I've also got another example from many years later. I was traveling along a ramp in Lancaster University campus. That's where I did my master's degree. And the ramp was quite hilly, but, you know, I'm going along, going absolutely fine, getting workout for the day, good cardiovascular workout. And somebody comes along who I don't know and says, oh, let me help you. And the thing is, before they actually said those words, let me help you, they had actually put their hands on my wheelchair. And I said, no, I'm all right, thank you. I'm absolutely fine. And actually, it took me 5 repetitions of I'm absolutely fine, thank you, for them to just step away from that boundary that I thought I had independence around. And that I found that quite intimidating, that somebody would unnecessarily want to step in and assist. And yes, there will be those people out there that are thinking, but this person was just doing a kind thing. And actually, the problem is that they didn't check in with me beforehand. They didn't say, can I help you? They said, let me help you. There is a big significant difference between can and let. And I think they just made an assumption, although it probably came from a kind-hearted place, that was a boundary that was crossed also. Yeah, but anyway.
There's something in there though, isn't it? I mean, you mentioned the word assumption, you know, because I think with things like that, it's not just about someone's intention, is it? You know, it's about the impact that it's having on somebody else. And I think particularly with boundaries, I think that is something that people need to think about, is what is this other person's boundaries? You know, it's not just about what I want and what I think is going to work in this situation. How is this other person in front of me feeling, and what are their boundaries? And I think that idea of offering help, okay, is one thing, but as you say, kind of almost forcing it onto somebody, whether they want it or not, is definitely breaking someone's boundaries, isn't it?
Whether it's well-meaning or otherwise. Yeah, I quite agree with what you're saying there. But yes, they're two examples from my real life. I'm sure thanks Callum has many.
Yeah, I do. I mean, there's not many that spring to mind, really. But I think what I was listening to your thing, Craig, and particularly the first one, I just, you know, I thought that was absolutely harrowing, the idea of being kind of enclosed in a space. And yeah, it's brutal. So I'm so, you know, I don't mean this in a patronizing way, but I'm just so sorry that you had to go through that, because not only is it a boundary thing, it's extremely ableist as well. And it's horrifying, if I'm brutally honest. And I say that from somebody who is able-bodied. So I'm well aware of my privilege in that. As for the second one, I mean, it kind of brings me back, you know, we were speaking about bullying before. It brings me back to that ideology of, and it's true, sometimes when people are bullying, they don't always know what they're doing is bullying. And from what you're saying there, it sounded like they were crossing a boundary and actually thought they were doing a nice thing, which in a way, yeah, like you say, of course it's coming from a good place. But when you're being invasive on somebody, or if you're putting yourself forward before asking somebody, it's quite intimidating, isn't it?
I know. And I suppose really, I am kind of a very proud person. I don't accept help easily. So that maybe played into my response in responding to that boundary when it was broken, which is why I said it 5 times.
Of course.
Before they would actually let go.
Of course. I don't even think it's got anything to do with you being proud, Craig. I think it's just the fact of the matter is you're an independent person. And I think when people try and cross that, regardless of the situations, it can become, I know it probably wasn't meant this way, but it can become quite disrespectful, can't it? And
it was, yeah.
I suppose interestingly, Craig, and I'm not moving on from that, I'm actually kind of keeping with the theme of what you were saying there. I was interested, Peter, kind of going on to the next question. Why do you think people do struggle to keep and maintain boundaries, just out of interest?
I mean, this was an interesting question for me. And one of the things that I was thinking about, and this does fit in, I think, with what we were just talking about, is sometimes with boundaries, the discussion goes along the lines of how you implement your boundaries and how you stand up for yourself and how you put these things in place to kind of protect yourself. And what it does is it starts to kind of bring in this idea of what we were talking about before, like limits, really. But I think boundaries really is about empathy and about trying to understand somebody else's position and kind of where they're coming from and what they find acceptable. And I think sometimes when we talk about boundaries, that's some of the thing that kind of gets lost a little bit, particularly when you're talking about counselling, but other relationships as well. It's really trying to see things from somebody else's perspective and understand understands where their limits are, you know, and not just thinking about yourself and where your own limits are. So I think it's important that we think about both aspects of things.
Yeah, I completely agree with you, Peter. And interestingly, you've just brought something up for me. I think it's something that I've thought of for years, and it's something that's really always wound me up with what therapists say. I probably have the BACP down my neck now going, what are you saying? But the notion that always annoys me is the idea that we leave ourselves door in terms of a boundary thing. I never understand that kind of, and maybe you might be able to comment on this further than me. I don't really think we can never leave ourselves at the door, can we? In my own opinion, I think as therapists, we, you know, and obviously in our private life, particularly in counseling, you know, we leave aspects of ourselves, or try to, at the door, but we have to be somewhat our transparent selves as well in therapy, don't we? You know, as counselors, as practitioners.
Completely. I mean, I think it's that idea for me. I mean, I'm a person-centered therapist. Mm. So for me,
yeah, me too.
You know, it's bringing your whole authentic self into the relationship with another human being. And so there are boundaries around that. Yeah. You know, I don't bring my whole narrative and history and talk about that within the counselling room, but I bring all that experience and all that knowledge with me into the counselling room. So yeah, I suppose it's a strange one. It's leaving aspects of yourself to one side, I suppose, and not bringing that into the room. But I don't think you can leave yourself outside the therapy room or the relationship.
Yeah, you're absolutely right, Peter, because I think there's something about as well. And I've had this conversation before, and I know Proctor speaks on it quite heavily. We talk about politics and counselling, don't we? For me, the two are very intertwined. I've always been very outspoken on that. People can disagree, and that's totally cool, especially if you disagree. Thank you, Craig, for that product placement there. But I always find it interesting how, particularly, I remember when I was doing my training, and you know, obviously I'm from Manchester, as you probably know, and when the arena attack happened, and you know, all that big atmosphere was going on, and another example when the elections were going on, and people were really frightened, you know, obviously being involved in that somewhat personally as well, it was hard for me to leave that out of the counselling room, because people were saying to me things like, how do you feel about that? And I couldn't not be congruent in that moment. It felt very, very relevant on a human level, if that makes sense.
It does make sense. And also sometimes I think, isn't it really odd if you, you know, built up a relationship with somebody that they would ask a question like that, and that you would avoid or not respond, or ask them, why are you asking that question? Yeah. When it's a moment of human connection where they're interested about kind of what's going on and your thoughts on something. I think it's really interesting at the moment, because I think in the past in counselling and psychotherapy, there has been this perspective, which is, you know, you don't bring aspects of yourself into the room and you keep everything hidden. And I think now with social media, if we're talking about boundaries, you know, there is a lot of therapists challenging that now, and a lot of therapists kind of openly talking about their own experiences, you know, in blogs and podcasts.
Absolutely.
And all of that kind of thing. And I think they're challenging the notion that actually you can't share aspects of yourself as a therapist. And yeah, I think something's shifting, I think, at the moment.
I completely agree with you, Peter. I think there is something about, and I was saying this to my supervisor the day, actually. She is on social media, but she's of a different generation to me. So when she started therapy, there was no such thing as social media. And she was saying to me, and we were both discussing, and we're saying, we're more exposed now than we ever have been. There isn't I mean, of course, there's always going to be a professional line there, but a bit kind of what you were saying before, Peter, that professional line is becoming thinner and thinner, isn't it? Not because we're choosing to, but because we are so connected now. The world isn't as big as it used to be, is it?
Yeah. I think that's really interesting. I don't know if I've used this example in another discussion, but when I was training, there was a book that we were kind of given to read, and it was about kind of setting up in private practice. And it said, and it wasn't a psychodynamic text, because I think some psychodynamic texts would have this in, but under no circumstances put a photograph on your website, because a client should not see what you look like before they meet you in the therapy space. And I always remember that book. I thought it was strange at the time, but I found it even more amusing now, you know, the fact that, you know, if you didn't have a photograph on your website as a private practitioner, I think people would think that was really strange.
Well, so, how disingenuous. You know. <Yeah.
laughs> But things, it's just interesting how things change, you know, and that's kind of the message that was going out, whatever it was 20 years ago, whatever, you know, things are completely different now, you know, and the world has changed. And I think we have to always be looking at how the world is changing and how we're responding to that as therapists. I don't think we can stay stuck in the past.
Definitely. I think you're absolutely spot on. So where were we, Craig? We were on the next question, weren't we? Do you want to read that out whenever you're ready?
Yeah, sure. So the question that we were talking about is, how how does one learn to accept a boundary? And also on the reverse side, how does one maintain one's boundaries when they're set?
I think I'll leave that one for Peter to start, and I'll put my thingy in there. And that's not me copying out. That's more and more interested to hear Peter's opinion on that one. So what do you think on that one, Peter?
I mean, this is really, again, really interesting questions. I think there's something about, for me, maintaining boundaries can be really challenging, I think. Particularly, and this goes back to a little bit what we were talking about before, if somebody is pushing your boundaries, you know, and trying to override your boundaries and get you to do something that you don't want to do. I think for me, something that's really important is to know yourself really well. And I think if you come from that place of knowing kind of who you are and what your boundaries are, I think it's a lot easier to kind of maintain them then. You know, I think it's a lot easier to kind of to say no to people or to just be clear about what it is that you want, really.
Yeah, I think there is something about it, isn't there, Peter? And what I was actually going to say, and you've sort of touched on it there, I think for me, it's about self-awareness. And I think that that can be the hardest thing to do, can't it? Especially not just as a therapist, but particularly in our private lives, you know, reflexivity is a powerful thing. And to know oneself and know what one's limits are and then stick to those limits is really challenging. You know, I'm a father, so, you know, I'm thinking about my own little girl. And I mean, she's one, so she doesn't understand boundaries at all. But I'm thinking about her kind of, you know, things like trying to even implement that with her. So if she doesn't want to kiss me, for example, say if I go to give her a kiss goodnight and she doesn't want one, I make sure I don't intrude on that boundary. I very much respect her consent on that. It starts with the little things, doesn't it? And I think for myself, who's now older, and this might come as a surprise to you, Peter, but I'm actually an introvert by nature. I probably don't seem it on this podcast, but I very much am. I keep a very small circle. And I think for me, when it's about like kind of people asking me to go out and things like that, it's about feeling whether my energy levels are up to that, if that makes sense. So it's that constant, I guess, checking in with oneself, isn't it, to an extent?
I mean, it's interesting because I would probably consider myself an introvert as well. So but believe that or not.
Sure.
And I totally get that, because there's something for me is actually I'm probably quite different in different spaces. So kind of I'm here today and I know that I'm going to be talking and I'm going to be talking about boundaries, and when I'm teaching I know that I'm going to be kind of quite communicative and really open and listening to people. But actually when I'm away from this space I might be a lot quieter, actually a lot more kind of just spending time with myself, and that's important for me to kind of rejuvenate myself and kind of build up my energy again. So and I protect those boundaries quite strictly, you know, when I'm not working. And so I think, yeah, I think there is something about that, about knowing yourself and being kind to yourself as well, really, you know, in terms of what you allow yourself to do and what you don't allow yourself to do.
Sure, there's levels of self-care, isn't there, in that, as well as self-awareness. I think you make a really good point. I mean, what does that do for you, Craig, out of interest in your own self? Do you have any thoughts on that?
Yeah, I knew you'd bring this up. I knew you'd request my opinion. So in my perspective, I am an ambivert. Now, Callum will be looking at me with disdain because he doesn't necessarily agree that ambiversion is a thing.
It is a thing.
I'm sorry, can we just repeat that for posterity?
Absolutely not. Go on, put your point across.
Okay, yes. So I am somewhere, if we're looking at, if we're thinking about a line, so if we're thinking on one side there is introversion and on one side there is extroversion, I am in the middle. It depends who I am with, how I move along that scale. If I am with somebody that I don't necessarily know, I will be very, very quiet until I have sort of found my place in the interaction or within the group. Or, as Callum will no doubt attest, if I have known somebody for a good long while, they will not be able to get me to keep quiet. Which is somewhat problematic, especially when I am very enthusiastic about certain things. But I would say that generally I am very nervous when I am presenting papers or academic research, and yet that is a type of introversion, I suppose, or social anxiety, and yet I would willingly do that because it's something I love to do. I love to talk to people, I love to engage with people, and I love to hear what they're thinking, you know. And I am somebody who very much is a competent communicator, but sometimes oversteps his own boundaries and doesn't necessarily read the room, depending on the situation. But yeah, I would say I'm an ambivert, and I sort of am in the middle. I can go either way. I can go quiet for days, or I can not shut up for days. It really depends on the situation and the context in which I am in.
Sure,
but I would say that sort of maintaining boundaries is all about sort of understanding yourself and why you would wouldn't necessarily want to push that boundary. And if you are wanting to push a boundary, you need to probably ask yourself, what are you getting from this person which requires you to push that boundary? Or what is this person not necessarily giving you in that moment? And why do you so desperately need it from that person? And sometimes that is a very difficult question to answer. And it's okay not to know the answer, because I would say that working on self-awareness is a lifetime thing. It's a lifetime achievement. You know, the self is never a finished product. It is a product that continually evolves, where we are either presenting ourselves in different groups or we change in some format. So we age, we change jobs, we sort of change roles, we change activities. Our boundaries can be completely different based upon all of those factors. Yeah. So, yeah.
I think that's a really good answer.
Thank you.
What do you think about that, Peter? I think going off that, I'm not doing that just to stroke your ego, Craig, but I think that's a really good point. And I think that I was thinking about my own personal life, and I've got friends who are extroverts who have got fantastic boundaries, and I've got one friend who's an introvert who doesn't actually know the meaning of the word boundary. So I don't think it's about being an extrovert, ambivert, or introvert. I think it's just about understanding your own process and other people's as well. And I think like you said there, Craig, what is that person not giving you, or what are you not getting from them?
Thank you. I appreciate the warm fuzzies, and that's a nice little TA joke for the transactional analysis out there.
But, yeah. Well, it's interesting because I was thinking of it, if we're getting into different philosophies, I was thinking about the person-centered condition, the six necessary and sufficient conditions. And when you were talking about how you were different in different settings and environments, and I was thinking, well, the conditions were right, you know, for you to kind of engage with that particular setting more so, you know, in some circumstances than others. Because I can really relate to what you're saying about I'm different in different roles that I'm in or in different relationships, you know, and it depends, all the different factors that kind of contribute to that, really. And I think you're right, Callum, in terms of my boundaries probably aren't necessarily related to my introversion or extroversion. There's quite a lot of different factors, I think, that influence those. Some of them might by the organization that I work in, say, for example, or, you know, the setting that I work in, as much as the relationships that I have with people as well.
Absolutely, Peter. Do you want to kind of going off on that, Craig? Do you want to kind of go on to the next question? So we're on the significance.
Certainly, yeah. So the significance of boundaries in psychotherapy and counselling. I was wondering, Peter, if you could explain from a professional standpoint of having been in the industry for a number of years, why exactly boundaries matter within the counselling space?
Boundaries for me, I mean, one of the fundamental aspects of counselling and psychotherapy. And I think really it's about kind of expectations of what is going to happen in the therapy space. And for people who don't know, there are many different types of counselling and psychotherapy. So actually understanding what the boundaries are, the limitations around those different types is probably quite important for anyone accessing counselling or psychotherapy as a client, because you might experience things very differently depending on what those boundaries are and the type of approach that is going to be used by your therapist. There is also a lot of things about security and safety and containment, and understanding what your therapist's boundaries are in terms of how they're going to work with you, how they manage sessions, all of that type of thing is going to make sure that you are safe and secure within the therapy space. Some people, for example, may really respond negatively to very, very strict boundaries, and or vice versa. People may respond quite negatively to very loose boundaries. And so it's really important that clients have that option to kind of have those boundaries of the space explained to them, and also that they are co-constructed between you and the therapist. You know, they're not just that the therapist is going to say this is how it is, get into it or not, but there is some kind of mutual understanding and consideration for each other's boundaries in the therapy space.
I really like that idea of the co-construction personally, because I think it's a huge part of building the therapeutic relationship, that boundaries are co-constructed, and you know what they are, what you are having is an interaction, and therefore there needs to be some relaxing of boundaries, but also some agreement, if that makes any sense, of what a boundary actually constitutes within that relationship. So the idea that, for example, you don't contact your therapist outside of sessions might be one of the agreed boundaries, or sessions only lasting 50 or 60 minutes, depending on how the therapist approaches it. Because I know that there are some therapists out there that do offer things like 1.5 hours of sessions, particularly for supervision and things like that. So it's not always 50 minutes.
Absolutely. And And just going back to the book that you mentioned before, so power, you know, and talking about power in counselling and psychotherapy, boundaries are all about power. And if we're going to try and work effectively as therapists, then we need to make sure that, that there is that distribution of power between the therapist and the client. You know, it's not just the therapist says, this is how it is, this is what you have to fit into, and then that's the end of it. I definitely think that there should be some co-construction there. And there might be some things that can't be changed from the therapist's point of view, you know, which is fine. But I think being explicit about that at the beginning is really important, and that boundaries are up for discussion and constant reflection. So it's not just something that we set out at the beginning and then that's it. You know, it's something that we can discuss continually as we work together. So yeah, I would agree with you. I think co-construction is really important, I think.
Yeah, I think I would agree with that, Peter. I think just to kind of clear on that point as well, is that one thing I've always been critical of about person-centered therapists, or not particularly the approach, more therapists, is I've found that a lot of person-centered counsellors, and feel free to disagree with me here, by the way, it's absolutely fine, found that they don't have a lot of power in terms of they kind of think, no, me and my client are completely equal. And I always found that really frustrating, because I'm kind of like, well, at the end of the day, we're professionals, we're in a very powerful relationship here, and we hold a lot of that power. Of course, there has to be an equal distribution of that, but ultimately, we are the ones with that power, I would say. I don't know if you agree with that or not, in terms of a boundary perspective.
Personally, I think that the power dynamics can shift in a counselling relationship. I do think that initially, or there is always a level of unequalness in terms of the knowledge and experience that the therapist has. And I think as a person-centred therapist, I'm always trying to redress that balance. Yeah. So try and equal it out in some way, you know? I don't think that's ever achievable, because I think power shifts and changes just as boundaries do. So I think it's almost impossible to get that kind of as equal. But I suppose it's a goal rather than a, you know, we presume that it is equal. It's absolutely kind of a goal of the therapy rather than something that just naturally happens because you're a person-centered therapist.
Yeah, and that's kind of my, I think that's where my criticism is. I think there has been, and I'm not stereotyped person-centered therapist here, but I have found in that kind of community that there is an assumption, I guess, that power is automatically equal, when, like you say, and I completely agree with you, it's something that is continually changing, isn't it? And I suppose as a professional, like you say, with that extra knowledge, that extra expertise, we will naturally have somewhat of a more of a power dynamic than our clients, won't we? But I know, like you say, obviously these things can yin and yang, can't they? They ebb and flow.
Yeah, but I think you're right. I think we have to acknowledge that as a, you know, if I'm a person-centered therapist that's worked with 500 clients, yeah, say, for example, then I've got an experience of the therapy relationships, you know, 500 times more than what the client, yeah, has, you know. We both come into that relationship as a fresh, you know, we've not, yeah, met each other before, and we create it together. But there is a difference there, you know. I've got maybe some understanding about therapeutic relationships and things that might come up and all of that kind of thing. So I don't think it can be equal, you know. There's things that differ, but yeah, I think it's an aim to try and equalize it out as much as we can.
No, I think that's a really good answer, Peter. Do you want to go on to the final question, Craig? Do you want to hit the home run?
Certainly.
To use a baseball reference though.
Of course, no problem. Can boundaries be broken or pushed if the situation necessitates it?
Massive curveball question.
Yeah, and I think, is there somewhere in between that invisible force field that a lacuna exists, that it is okay to have a boundary moved or a goalpost moved, for example? Yeah, it's just a definite thought that I would like answering, or a question that I would like answering from the professionals in the room.
I suppose for me, when I read that question, this idea of kind of like rigidity came up, this idea of, oh, you know, there's this line and we're breaking it, or we're kind of doing something that shouldn't be done. And I suppose what I'd possibly do is maybe reframe it a little bit to the idea of boundaries being quite flexible and they can be crossed. So rather than feeling that we're breaking a boundary, we're pushing a boundary, that there is something about that they're a bit more flexible and fluid, and actually we can change them, we can amend them, we can have one-off occasions where we don't stick to it. But in all of that, we're just being quite mindful about why we're doing that, and quite explicit with each other about what's happening. You know, is this a one-off occurrence? Say, for example, there's a reason why we're doing it. Are we talking about that? Or is this something that, you know, we shouldn't do? You know, and I think it's about being clear with each other about why we're doing that and what it's about. Does that make sense?
Definitely agree with you on that. Wonderful, wonderful answer. And I was wondering if Callum had anything more to contribute to that.
I actually think it makes, I do, Craig. I think it makes it sound much nicer, if I'm honest, Peter, because I think there's something about boundaries. And I don't know what you think on this, Peter, but when you imagine boundaries, I always imagine them as really dark, really, in a way. Like, you know, I sometimes get the idea of like Harry Potter and the unbreakable bond sort of thing. You know, if you break them, it's death by association or something like that. Particularly how it's taught, I don't know. And that's not me throwing my contemporaries under the bus there. I just mean that something about interpretation. And there is something very black and white about boundaries. And I think maybe what it's about is realizing there's a bit more of a grayer area in there, if that makes sense.
I would completely agree with that. I do think, and there's lots of different words actually that I think in counselling and psychotherapy sometimes have this very restricted, limited idea of what they are. And I think we lose a lot of the nuance in that sometimes. So I completely agree with you. I think boundaries, if you look at the research on boundaries, like a lot of the research goes to like boundary violations and things like that. And I think that's really important research. Obviously, you know, it is really important that we're looking at situations where clients have had boundaries that have been violated. But there is a lot of other things to boundaries as well. And there's a lot of other nuance there. And I think sometimes we can be quite frightened of breaking a boundary or crossing a boundary because we're worried that, you know, our supervisor is going to challenge us or our peers might look down on us or whatever. And I think as long as we're trying to reflect on why we've done that, you know, and that we're trying to do it in the best interest of our clients, then I think we need to have more of those conversations, really, because a lot of the time those boundaries that we're looking to cross maybe are in the interests of our client and do actually help the therapy. And I think if we've got that at the heart of it, then we can't go too far wrong.
I think that's an absolutely outstanding question, Peter, and I think that's a really good thing to finish on. We were wondering actually, and this is okay if you don't, by the way, we'll just edit this out. We were just wondering if you've got any questions for us just before we kind of come to the end, Peter. And from myself, just thank you so much for coming on. It's an absolute pleasure to have you on here, and I've certainly learned a lot from this experience. I don't know if you've got anything you want to add to that, Craig, as well.
Just sincere thanks for willing to engage with us as, you know, in training professionals, because like you're Peter Blundell, like, you know, you wouldn't imagine that an individual such as yourself would have time for small fry like us, I suppose. So sincerest thanks for making time and making space. And we sincerely look forward to working with Therapists Connect going forward.
Absolutely. We're really excited.
Well, that's very kind to say, but I really feel like you're making a difference by bringing some of these topics and discussions out into the open. And I think it's really important work. And, you know, I don't like this idea of kind of status in the profession. You know, we're all therapists. Even if you're in training and you're working with clients, you're a therapist, you know, and we all have that ability to kind of have these discussions and learn from each other. So, I mean, I really appreciate the work that you're doing. I'm really glad that you invited me on because I've had a really nice time today. So thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. The question is, will you come back?
Of course, absolutely.
There was definitely a semi-emotional blackmail in that, wasn't
there? Maybe.
Right, we'll end on that then. Thank you so much, everyone.
Fabulous.
Thank you.